from King's Arms who's going to be speaking this evening. Can I just start by praying?
Please do.
Dear Lord, we thank you that we can all be here together, that we can all know that you are with us, that your spirit is here with us, and I pray that you'd bless Helen as she speaks on your word, Lord. I pray that her words would stay with us and really impact us as we go out in the days ahead, Lord. Amen.
Good evening. I apologize that I am sucking on a sweet. That's because I have a slight dry cough and I don't want to cough all over everybody. Thank you so much for welcoming me and my other friends from King's Arms here this evening. It's really lovely to be with you. And it's just, for me, such a privilege to be able to speak to you, and particularly to be able to speak on this topic, which is something that you'll find out is just really close to my heart. I wanted to start by timing this, actually, so I don't run over. I wanted to start by looking at the story of Joseph, because when we think about slavery, that's really where we start in the Bible, isn't it? Because there are so many stories of slavery, but Joseph is the one that we know about. However, I will say, hopefully this is, are we working? No. There we go. Yeah, there we go. Hey, okay. So I don't know about you, I don't know if you can see that very clearly, but when I think about slavery, when I think about the story of Joseph, this is what I think about. It's Joseph, Jason Donovan in his Technicolor Dreamcoat. And as a child, I was part of a choir that sang all the songs from this musical. So the story of Joseph for me is actually quite a light-hearted thing when I think about it. I think, well, actually, there's some really good things in this. So, yes, he was sold into slavery, but the story really is a great one because it ends in victory, doesn't it? When we think about it, yeah, he was a guy who came from a troubled family. His brothers didn't like him, but at the end of the day, he got sold to slavery, but then he ended up being the ruler of all Egypt. Wasn't that amazing? And then to top it all, his brothers came to find him. He ended up saving the family, solving all their financial problems, saving them from a certain death during the drought, and then he ends up forgiving them, being reconciled to his family. And what an amazing story, right? No wonder it made it to the Bible. No wonder Andrew Lloyd Webber or whoever it was wanted to make a musical out of it, because it is a great story. And I don't want to lose the fact that the story of Joseph is about God's faithfulness. You know, that God did not forget Joseph. That even though he was one of 12 brothers, he was a nobody really, and he's there in that cistern and whatever, God didn't forget him, and actually he used that situation to his glory. So I want to just hold that in mind before we move forward. But we are going to move forward, because we are going to move forward to today. So we're just going to look in a bit more detail. So first of all, one of the things we know is that Joseph was the favorite son. He was the first son of the favorite wife of Jacob. And as a result, that's how he ends up with this lovely coat. And obviously that creates a little bit of jealousy amongst the other 11 brothers. To top it all, he was a dreamer. He had these amazing dreams that all of his brothers were going to bow down to him one day. And not only did he have these dreams, he told them. Like, what was he thinking? So, hence, he became a little bit unpopular, and we end up with this scenario that we've just had read to us, where he ends up, you know, the brothers are just sick of him, basically, and they want to get rid of him. And they shove him in a cistern, and then eventually they decide, no, rather than killing him, we will sell him. And this is where we get to the story of slavery, really. So they sold him to some Midianite traders, as we just heard. And then he was taken to Egypt, and he was sold to a guy called Potiphar, who was one of the officials in Pharaoh's household. And Pharaoh was the ruler of Egypt. So ultimately, as we have just heard, it was recognized that Joseph was actually an exceptional young man. And he was ultimately put in charge of Potiphar's household. So he had a very good position. Unfortunately, though, Potiphar's wife decided that actually she rather liked him. And due to an unfortunate series of circumstances, he ends up running out of her house with just a towel around his waist or a sheet or something. And as a result, he, Joseph, gets thrown into prison. While he's in prison, two of the other prisoners have dreams. Okay, and Joseph is able to interpret them because God showed him the meaning of them. And one of them went to his death. The other one, as Joseph correctly predicted, was restored to his position as the cupbearer for Pharaoh. So as the cupbearer leaves and goes to be restored, Joseph says to him, "Don't forget me. Don't forget that I'm still here in this prison." Okay, so we need to remember that he's in that prison for some time. And there's a lot of dreams in this story. But then guess what? Pharaoh has a dream, and it's a very troubling dream, that he has a dream about these seven skinny calves and seven fat calves. And he's like, what does this mean? And he asks all his sorcerers, all his wise men, or everyone he can find, and nobody can tell him the reason or the meaning for this dream. And eventually, he's not very quick, this cupbearer, but eventually he goes, "Oh, I know, do you know what? There was this guy in the prison and I had this dream and he told me what it meant." So they get Joseph out in front of Pharaoh, and Joseph tells Pharaoh the meaning of his dream. And he predicts not only that there will be 7 years of famine, but he also explains to him how he can come up with a plan that will manage the resources of Egypt in order for them to live through the famine. And as a result, amazingly, Pharaoh says, "Great, we'll put you in charge." And he puts him in charge of all of Egypt. So this is the story that we know and that we love and that we celebrate, and we celebrate God's goodness and God's faithfulness in that, not just to Joseph, not just to his family, but to nations. So the nation of Egypt and the surrounding nations, which also survived the drought because of that. Okay, so that we love and we know, but I also want to look at some other aspects of this story. Oh, sorry, I didn't put those up. There we go. We talked about that. Ultimately, he's reconciled to his family, which is great. But I'm going to look at some other features of Joseph's story that we don't talk about so much. So the story starts with him being betrayed by his family. You know, actually, how would that feel? You imagine if your brothers and sisters said, "Actually, we hate you so much that we're just going to kill you." Imagine if that's how your family treated you. I cannot imagine, honestly, how that would feel. The rejection, the shame, the anguish. Just an awful situation to be in. Another thing that we know about Joseph, he sold on to some Midianite traders. So they wouldn't have spoken the same language. He doesn't know where he's going. He doesn't know what they're going to do with him. He doesn't know anything about his situation. Suddenly he just finds himself taken off to some place he doesn't even know where, and he doesn't know what, and he doesn't know how. He gets there, he's finally familiar with his sister, with his captors, he's familiar with his situation, and guess what? They sell him on again. They sell him to Potiphar. And again, he's in a new situation. And although we know that ultimately Potiphar raised him up to a position of authority, before that, actually, he had to work, you know, as a slave for a long time. He was never paid for that. Even when he was in charge of the household, he was still a slave. He had no rights. He didn't get paid. He was exploited for his labor. We also know that he was a victim of sexual exploitation. You imagine if Joseph was on Twitter right now, talking about Potiphar's wife and the way that she tried to seduce him. Hashtag me too. Like, honestly, we look at these things in a very different light now, that we think, oh, it was okay. He was a guy. She was a woman. You know, it was just, no, actually, he was actually a victim of sexual exploitation, or potentially. And he was also wrongly imprisoned as a result of that, which was not his fault. So all those things given, I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. So about 10 years ago, I was invited to a church very much like this. to hear a talk very much like this by a lady who came from an organization called Hope for Justice. And she told us about modern slavery, and she told us about some of the things that their organization do. They actually have criminal investigators who are professionals, and they go in, they gather intelligence, and they go into situations where it's suspected that there might be situations of modern slavery. And they actually go in and rescue these girls. And she showed us videos of some of these people who had survived these situations. And actually, honestly, they were harrowing. And I'm not going to show you anything like that. Because actually, it was really difficult to listen to. And that's not that you shouldn't. But we came to the end of the evening, and she said to us, right, okay, I want you to decide. What are you going to do about this? And I was there with three women that I barely knew. They were kind of acquaintances, and we looked at each other and we were like, what are we going to do? And one of them, I was just saying to my friend here, who's actually from Hull, and one of them, she said, I already work with the prostitutes. I can't. I'm already doing my bit. And the other three of us, we committed to get together and just to pray about it and to take some action. And ultimately, that one decision led to, for me personally, because I ended up heading up this thing, it ended up with me personally going to the police, the NHS, the local councillor, the local council, the police crime commissioner, various people in various high up places across the city, with literally people going and opening doors for me and saying, I will get you in there, you do the talking. I was on the local media. I became like the voice of the authority on modern slavery in Hull, which was crazy because I knew next to nothing, but I knew a little bit more than most other people did. And so just by me saying yes, I ended up in these crazy, crazy positions. And the thing is, and I also, we arranged training, actually. We arranged training for professionals, for police, for all these people I've just mentioned, for community workers, people who worked with homeless people and in community centres across the city. And after we'd got a couple of people in at great difficulty, I thought, you know what? I used to be a teacher. I can deliver this training myself. So I personally delivered training to about 200-300 people across the city of Hull, just because every time we would put it on, my church would say, yes, you have the room for free. We will set it all up. You run it. And people would come in. And so, yeah, every time all the seats were full. And but it struck me today that I only really have one message, and it's still the same message. A lot has changed in this country in the time that that has elapsed since then. In 2015, the Modern Slavery Act was passed. Some of you might be aware of that, and that's changed everything, actually. It means that social services, the police, the councils, they all have a statutory responsibility, which means they have to do something about it now, which they didn't before. It means that there's a law so that if somebody is caught for offences of modern slavery, that they can be tried and convicted for modern slavery. Before that, they couldn't, because it didn't even exist as a thing. So a lot has changed, but it struck me that today I'm still standing here with the same message, which is slavery still exists. And I just want to show you a video which is from 2011 or 2012, but for me it really brings home what we're talking about this evening. Okay.
Thank you. So I don't think I need to labour the point about the similarities between what we see there and what Joseph experienced. When I watched this, I have watched this loads of times, and when I watched it this week, I was struck by how much that street that she was on looks like this street. So many streets that I drive down in Bedford. And I was really struck by that. What we're showing here is basically a sweatshop of the kind that actually exists at the back of people's houses, you know, in what would look from the front like a derelict house. Equally, it could be an industrial unit that has a cannabis factory in it. Equally, it could be a situation from 2011. I don't know if you remember this. In a village called Little Billington, near Leighton Buzzard, 24 people were held as slaves for up to 15 years. And at the time when I started speaking about this, that really was the landmark case, because that was the one that had been the most successfully proved and prosecuted. That is not far from here, is it? And so when we say that slavery is closer than you think, like we know that for a fact. And I don't think you're going to be able to see these statistics very clearly, but I will try and just tell you what they are. Just because, so at the end of that video, so that's from 2011, and it says if we don't act, those figures will go up in 2012 onwards. So you can see the smallest one is 2012, and the biggest one is 2018. Okay, so I'm not going to go into the figures, but I think we can see what has happened every year. Now, I will say part of that is that so this video that you've just watched was actually an advert that was put out on TV screens. You might even have seen it at the time. It was a national advert. So things like that actually raised awareness, and things like you can now, as the guy did, you can go on your phone, you can go to the Crime Stoppers website, you can report something then and there. It means that obviously more cases are getting reported. However, we do know that more cases are also happening. And if we go on to this one, no, you really can't see this one, I'm sorry about that. This shows you the countries that people come from when they're trafficked into this country. Okay, so we're talking about Pakistan, India, Nigeria, Eritrea, Sudan, Romania, China, Vietnam, Albania, and then the bottom one is actually the United Kingdom. And the reason that that is so high is you might have heard of county lines gangs. And that is why that's young people being trafficked from city to city within the UK. Also because of child sexual exploitation. And the big cases we've had there, like Rochester, for example. And that kind of explains the statistics. So just briefly, just to recap, modern slavery is exactly the same as what happened to Joseph. You know, people are betrayed and coerced into slavery, often by family members or friends. That's what happens. Often it's a boyfriend. You know, somebody gets a new boyfriend and he says, come to the United Kingdom with me. We'll have a fantastic life together. And when they get here, the girl is then sold on into slavery. Often they're sold from one buyer to another, and then another, and then another. Same as Joseph. Victims are held prisoner, just like that girl was. People can be victims of labour exploitation, as she was, and then sexual exploitation at the same time, and lots of other types of slavery. So cannabis farming is one. Domestic servitude is a big one, where people are just held as slaves in people's families. Some people escape and seek help from strangers. And this is just the one that I wanted to end on, really, because when me and my friends in Hull, when we started talking about it, we had one question. And our question was, if somebody managed to escape from this circumstance where they're held as a captive, if they managed to escape and the first place they came to was our church, and they came into our church seeking sanctuary, what would we do? And that's why we started getting training. And I cannot fully answer that question right now. I can give you plenty of information if you want to talk to me afterwards. But that is what I would like you to think about. If somebody came into your church and said, help, like, I've just escaped, what are you going to do? And so, like, I can tell you that you have a really good place to start. You have Jude, you have Will, you have Sarah. They don't know the answer. I can tell you that they're going to find out. And, you know, and we don't have answers. We never have a perfect situation. But not long after I started asking that question, a local pastor came to me. Actually, he was a minister from a Methodist church. And he said, actually, that has just happened in a village near here. That is exactly what happened. And he said, you know, we kind of told her to go to Citizens Advice or something. And I was like, oh, no, no, don't go do that. You know, if you have your Unseen app, I know some of you will have that already. You will know you can ring the human trafficking hotline. If you have a mobile phone, if you have a phone, a computer, anything, you can go on the Crime Stoppers website, you can report it. But honestly, if there is danger to life and limb, you think that person is in danger, you pick up the phone and you ring the police. You know, you just ring 999 and say, we have somebody here and they are in danger. And yeah, that perhaps wasn't where I was going to end, but to be honest, I think that is the most important thing, that you need to be aware that in your church, in your workplace, as you are walking down the street, these are all things that happen in the UK on a regular basis, that people encounter them. And people escaping from slavery, often their story is, I escaped and I ran and I just grabbed the first person and I said, can you help me? And I just want to challenge you. We need to be a people that are prepared to answer that question, you know. And if all you do is ring 999, that is a massive, massive thing. If you report it to Crime Stoppers, if you bring them somewhere safe and say, I don't know the answer, but we'll keep you safe until we can find out. You know, we need to be those people and we need to be prepared because this really is serious and it really does happen. Okay, and I'm going to end there, but I will leave that on the screen for you to look at. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for that talk. Thank you for coming. Yeah, there's a